Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. This new system that Paul English has put in seems to be working quite nicely. So we've been running without problems ever since, you know, as you most listeners will recall, 2018 was a nightmare for us trying to get the shows go on live. We had several months in a row where we just couldn't go live. Finally got that fixed, and now Paul English has put in an entirely new system. And this new system has been working beautifully since he put it in. So, but we still have a lot of gaps to fill in. So that still needs to be done. And we'll be back to 24/7.
I was doing a lot of the post-production work, having to manually enter in repeats and stuff. Mm-hmm. Paul's got this baby set up now where if it's a live show, once I put it into Cloud Up, and the add new post on EFR, so it shows on the EFR website, the repeats will automatically pick that up, and I don't have to enter all those repeats manually.
Nice.
And boy, does that take a lot of workload off of me, man. I am so glad of that.
Now you can have more time to watch spaghetti westerns.
Well, I'm not. I'm doing my archery practice quite a bit.
I see.
And I'm watching my weight, and I'm getting some walking in. Summer's coming on, and I think this is going to be a long, hot summer. It's already almost. It's up in the. It will hit up in the 90s here this week.
Mm-hmm.
So, wow. And it's been in the 80s, the high 80s. It was 86 the other day, and it's going to be in the 90s this week. And I look with all the fomenting by the left
mm-hmm.
in this country, I look for it to be a violent summer.
Uh-huh.
Unfortunately, that's coming. None of us want it. Okay, but we need to live in the real world, and we've been chatting in some of the other chat rooms, not the EFR chat, but some of the other stuff about France. I think France mm-hmm. is going to kick it off this summer.
It already has. It already has. The yellow vests?
I mean really kick it
okay,
off.
Even worse than the yellow vest
scenario. Oh, man. And there's a lot of resistance in Germany behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm. Not being reported by mainstream. Yep.
And when they go, when our brothers in Germany decide they're going to clean house,
mm-hmm.
look out.
That's so, right. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, boy. And hello, Israelite One, brother. Good to see you in here.
Yeah.
And I have been, Oroville Dam may be the next big false flag, almost at full capacity. It's an earthen dam.
Uh-oh.
That's from Brother Hebert.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
That's out in California, right, brother?
Well, there's we've been saying for years that they could precipitate a quote-unquote natural disaster, right, and use that as an excuse to declare martial law. Okay? So that could happen
California,
at any time.
Man. Mm-hmm.
That could happen at any time. There's no telling when they decide they need to do that. Okay? So at the moment, they're just playing us for fools, whether we're Republicans or Democrats. You know,
it doesn't seem to make much difference.
No, it doesn't make much difference who gets in. It's just, in fact, many people have commented, things actually get worse when we have a Republican president because people actually think he's going to make any real changes. And they don't. They act just like the previous Democratic administration acted, right? So has there been any real change from Obama to, besides rhetoric, from Obama to Trump?
Not well. Yeah. You know, he's built some sections of the wall.
Right, but they're still coming in.
Another brick in the wall.
Right. It is, yeah. So, but they're still being allowed to stay in these holding centers, and from there they're being distributed to all parts of the country. So what good is the wall doing?
Right. I haven't seen any good from it, actually.
No, neither have I. So it's just more smoke and mirrors.
The documented numbers of these people coming in is huge. I mean,
it's a never-ending flow. Mm-hmm. Revelation chapter 12, the flood, the enemy shall come in as a flood. Yeah. And it can't be Israel because they don't allow any immigrants.
No, they... Mm-hmm. They're getting ready to kick all the blacks out.
Yeah, they do that repeatedly.
They don't want them. Mm-hmm. They don't want them.
Absolutely. You know, all right. Yeah. Okay. Well, we're getting ready today to do part 18 or 19. I forget. Part 19.
19. I got it in the chat room.
Okay. Very good. Of Josephus, Antiquities of Judah, Not the Jews. This book, which is translated by William Whiston, makes numerous references to the differences between Edomites and Judahites throughout. And this is something that the scholars of the Judeo-Christian world, and we know there is no such thing as Judeo-Christianity, but there's all these people who pretend that there is, and a lot, most of these are theologians belonging to the various denominations. And none of them will refer to these distinctions between Edomites and Judahites. You're simply left to assume that Herod was a legitimate Judahite king. Okay? So unless you do the research that we're providing here from Josephus and from the other apocryphal books, where the racial segregation practices of the house of Israel, the house of Judah, were being strictly followed, especially the house of Judah, through the Maccabees, down up until King John Hyrcanus, they were practicing circumcision on Israelite men only. They would never circumcise a non-Israelite male. That was changed by our Judeo-Christian values. Yeah, who's our Jews? Yeah, and liberals. So that's when all the nastiness started, when John Hyrcanus absorbed these Edomites into and made what if America joined up with Mexico, it would be Amorexico, which we actually have already. Yeah, it's not just named that. That's what happened under John Hyrcanus. He combined two separate nations, Edom or Idumea, and Judah. And that created an ethnically diverse state, which was previously ethnically segregated. All right? And this is abundantly proven by reading Antiquities of Judah and by reading the Apocrypha, especially the books of Esdras and 1st and 2nd Maccabees. They prove this conclusively.
Well, we need to reinstitute circumcision of these non-whites at the neck.
Okay. I was waiting for the punchline. All right. Okay, so according to your message to me, we are in Book 17, Chapter 5, but I do not have verses in my rendition here. I think yours verse 117.
I've got it. I'm ready to go, verse 117.
Okay, what chapter?
Nor were you content to be wicked yourself, but you filled your mother's head with your devices and raised disturbances among your brothers, and had the boldness to call your father a wild beast.
Right.
While you had yourself a mind more cruel than any serpent, when you set out that poison among your nearest family and greatest benefactors, mm-hmm. and invited them to assist you and guard you.
Okay, hold on. Just to bring people up to speed, this is Nicolaus speaking on behalf of Herod against Antipater at Antipater's trial. Okay, so this is still Nicolaus speaking. Back to you.
Okay. And did hedge yourself in on all sides by the artifices of both men and women against an old man, as though that mind of yours was not sufficient of itself to support so great a hatred as you bore him.
Wow. And he's not holding back. Go ahead.
No, he's laying on the line.
He is, yeah.
And here you appear after the tortures of free men, of domestics, of men and women, which have been examined on your account, and after the information of your fellow conspirators, as making haste to contradict the truth, and have thought on ways not only how to take your father out of the world, but to annul that written law which is against you, and the virtue of Varus, and the nature of justice. Nay, such is that impudence of yours on which you confide, while you allege that the tortures of those already examined thereby have made them tell lies, that those that have been the deliverers of your father may not be allowed to have spoken the truth, but that your tortures may be esteemed the discoverers of truth. Will you not, O Varus, deliver the king from the injuries of his family? Will you not destroy this wicked wild beast, which has pretended Edomite. Kindness to mm-hmm. his father in order to destroy his brothers, while yet he is himself alone ready to carry off the kingdom immediately and appears to be the most bloody butcher to him of them all?
Wow.
For you are sensible that patricide is a general injury both to nature and to common life, and that the intention of patricide is not inferior to its perpetration. And he who does not punish it is injurious to nature itself. Now, section
okay.
six.
Pretty- wow. So you can imagine what's going on in Herod's mind, right? Listening to all this.
Cheering this guy on.
Yeah, right. After he was almost persuaded by Antipater that he might be innocent, right? Because he was begging for his life. Okay, your son.
I didn't inhale.
Your son is begging for his life.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so one viper to another, right? Okay, section six. Nicolaus added further, what belonged to Antipater's mother and whatsoever she had prattled like a woman, as also about the predictions and the sacrifices relating to the king, and whatsoever Antipater had done lasciviously in his cups and his amours among Pheraris's women. Okay, so there was hanky-panky going on in the harem. The examination upon torture and whatsoever concerned the testimonies of the witnesses, which were many and of various kinds. Some prepared beforehand, and others were sudden answers, which further declared and confirmed the foregoing evidence. Well, people will say all kinds of things under torture.
I remember that great song.
Mm-hmm.
My baby does the hanky-panky.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Tommy James and the Shandells. For those men who were not acquainted with Antipater's practices, but had concealed them out of fear when they saw that he was exposed to the accusations of the former witnesses, and that his great good fortune, which had supported him hitherto, had now evidently betrayed him into the hands of his enemies, who were now insatiable in their hatred to him, told all they knew of him. So anyway, all the people who had said good things about Antipater did so out of fear. And now these people understand this, and his ruin was now hastened, not so much by the enmity of those who were his accusers, but by his gross, impudent, and wicked contrivances, and by his ill will to his father and his brethren, while he had filled their house with disturbance and caused them to murder one another. That's what the Jews do to us. They cause us to murder each other, don't they?
Well, they do that themselves. If they have a little corporate war going on, somebody has a plane crash.
There you go.
Amazing how that happens.
Yeah, or a yacht suddenly sinks. Right? Right? It blows up in the middle of the ocean. All right. So these people all now were turned against Antipater, and obviously for good reason. Now, there were a great number who
skipped a section.
Oh, I did?
Yeah, and was neither fair in his hatred nor kind in his friendship, but just so far as served his own turn. Mm-hmm. Now you can do the other.
Okay. Keep reading, because I totally lost my place.
Now there were a great number who for a long time beforehand had seen all this.
Right. Okay.
And especially such as were naturally disposed to judge of matters by the rules of virtue, because they were used to determine about affairs without passion, but had been restrained from making any open complaints before, these, upon the leave now given them, produced all that they knew before the public.
Okay.
They all snitched on him. Now
right,
it's your turn.
Right.
Go ahead.
And it's a very good comment here that the Jews still use this tactic of playing upon our emotions rather than objective fact, right? And they still do this. They're absolute experts at playing on our emotions. Continuing. The demonstrations also of these wicked facts could no way be disproved, because the many witnesses there were did neither speak out a favor to Herod, nor were they obliged to keep what they had to say silent, out of suspicion of any danger they were in. But they spake what they knew, because they thought such actions very wicked, and that Antipater deserved the greatest punishment. And indeed, not so much for Herod's safety as on account of the man's own wickedness. So, basically, everybody hated Antipater because he was evil to everybody.
Fake Jews.
Yeah,
fake Jews.
Right?
Everybody hates you.
Amen.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Many things were also said, and those by a great number of persons who were, I mean, how long did this trial last? I mean, Antipater's got to be melting in his shoes here, who used generically to be very sure, in so much that Antipater, who used generally to be very shrewd in his lies and impudence, was not able to say one word to the contrary. When Nicolaus had left off speaking and had produced the evidence, Verus bade Antipater to betake himself to making his defense, if he had prepared anything whereby it might appear that he was not guilty of the crimes he was accused of. For that, as he was himself desirous, so did he know that his father was in like manner desirous also to have him found entirely innocent. I don't know about that. Maybe Herod was putting on airs
Herod was such a mess at that point. He was going back and forth. He couldn't make up his mind.
Right.
He was just bamboozled with all of this. And he knew his son was a rotten apple, but not this bad.
Right. Yes.
I mean, this Nicolaus just laid it on thick.
Yeah, so, right.
Let's see what happens here. Go
he's
ahead.
A good lawyer. He's a good lawyer. But Antipater fell down on his face and appeal to God and to all men for testimonials of his innocence, desiring that God would declare by some evident signals that he had not laid any plots against his father, and he was struck by lightning on the spot. No, sorry, I added that. This being the usual method of all men destitute of virtue, I love it, that when they set about any wicked undertakings, they fall to work according to their own inclinations. Well, they don't believe in God anyway, so they don't think they're going to get struck by lightning. As if they believed that God was unconcerned in human affairs. But when once they are found out and are in danger of undergoing the punishment due to their crimes, they endeavor to overthrow all the evidence against them by appealing to God. Every war starts by an appeal to God.
And you can hear the great voice from heaven.
How long can you tread water?
Right? Not very long, which was the very thing which Antipater now did. Because that's his only defense, appeal to God. For whereas he had done everything as if there were no God in the world, when he was on all sides, a typical Jew, when he was on all sides distressed by justice, and when he had no other advantage to expect from any legal proofs by which he might disprove the accusations laid against him, he impudently abused the majesty of God and ascribed it to his power, that he hath been preserved hitherto, or up to this point, and produced before them all what difficulties he had ever undergone in his bold acting for his father's preservation. Okay, so basically he's trying to make excuses for everything that he'd done up to this point, but very few people believed him anymore. All right, section 7, back to you.
Yep. The cat's out of the bag.
Dude. Yeah.
So when Verus, upon asking Antipater what he had to say for himself, found that he had nothing to say beside his appeal to God, and saw that there was no end of that, he directed them to bring the potion before the court, that he might see what virtue still remained in it. Okay.
Poison?
The potion.
Yeah, potion. Poison potion.
Yeah.
Yeah. God protect him. Poison, right? Okay, let's see what happens.
And when it was brought, and one that was condemned to die had drunk it by Varus's command, he died presently.
Man. Wow.
Well, I drank this and...
This is better than reality television.
Man.
Wow. Wow, okay.
This is... Only Hollywood could come up with something like this.
Right.
Then Varus got up and departed out of the court and went away the day following to Antioch, where his usual residence was, because that was the palace of the Syrians, upon which Herod laid his son in bonds. But Varus's conversations with Herod were not known to the public, and upon what words it was that he went away, though it was also generally supposed that whatever Herod did afterward about his son was done with his approval. But when Herod had bound his son, he sent letters to Rome to Caesar about him by such messengers as should, by word of mouth, inform Caesar of Antipater's wickedness. Now, at this very time, there was seized a letter of Antipholus written to Antipater out of Egypt, for he lived there. And when it was opened by the king, it was found to contain what follows. I quote, "I have sent you Acme's letter and hazarded my own life, for you know that I am in danger from two families if I be discovered. I wish you good success in your affair. These were the contents of this letter. But the king made inquiry about the other letter also, for it did not appear. And Antipholus's slave, who brought that letter which had been read, denied that he had received the other. But while the king was in doubt about it, one of Herod's friends, seeing a seam upon the inner coat of the slave,
uh-oh,
and a doubling of the cloth, ooh, for he had two coats on, he guessed that the letter might be within that doubling, which accordingly proved
true.
He had it sewn inside his coat.
Sherlock Holmes.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
So they took out the letter, and its contents were these. I quote, "Acme to Antipater, I have written such a letter to your father as you desired me. I have also taken a copy and sent it, as if it came from Salome,
ooh,
to my lady Livia, mm-hmm, which, when you read, I know that Herod will punish Salome as plotting,
wow,
against him."
This is what the Jews did in France just before the French Revolution. They,
yep,
forged all these letters making accusations against innocent people, and it, well, guess what happened? They got their heads chopped off. Back to you.
Yep, the guillotine.
Mm-hmm.
Now this pretended letter of Salome to her lady was composed by Antipater,
oh,
in the name of Salome, yes, to its meaning, but in the words of Acme. The letter was this, I quote, "Acme to King Herod, I have endeavored that nothing is done against you should be concealed from you. So, upon my finding a letter of Salome written to my lady against you, I have written out a copy and sent it to you, with hazard to myself, but for your advantage. The reason why she wrote it was this, that she had a mind to be married to Sylleus. Do you therefore tear this letter in pieces, that I may not come into danger of my life," unquote. Now, Acme had written to Antipater himself and informed him that, in compliance with his command, she had both herself written to Herod, as if Salome had laid a sudden plot entirely against him, and had sent, and had herself sent, pardon me, a copy of an epistle as coming from Salome to her lady. Now, Acme was a Judean by birth, and a servant to Julia, Caesar's wife, and did this out of her friendship for Antipater, as having been corrupted by him with a large present of money. Money, 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 money.
Right?
To assist in his ruinous designs against his father and his aunt.
Okay.
Over to you.
Yeah, so it must take a lot of money to overcome the, you know, because Acme would have understood that if all this is found out, she would be in danger too. So this had to be a great sum of money to convince her to do this. Section 8. Hereupon Herod was so amazed at the prodigious wickedness of Antipater that he was ready to have him ordered to be slain immediately. As a turbulent person in the most important concerns, well, he had that poison potion. He could have made him drink it. But I don't know if Herod would be so bold as to do that without Caesar's approval. And as one that had laid a plot not only against himself, but against his sister also, and even corrupted Caesar's own domestics, Salome also provoked him to it, beating her breast and bidding him to kill her if he could produce any credible testimony that she had acted in that manner. Herod also sent for his son and asked him about this matter and bade him contradict it if he could, and not suppress anything he had to say for himself. And when he had not one word to say, he asked him, since he was every way caught in this villainy, that he would make no further delay but to discover his associates in these wicked designs. So he laid all upon Antipholus, but discovered nobody else. Hereupon Herod was in such great grief that he was ready to send his son to Rome to Caesar, there to give an account of his wicked contrivances. But he soon became afraid lest he might there, by the assistance of his friends, escape the danger he was in. So he kept him bound as before, and sent more ambassadors and letters to Rome to accuse his son, and an account of what assistance Acme had given him in his wicked designs, with copies of the epistles before mentioned. So Herod had acted impetuously in going to war against the marauders in a neighboring country, and Caesar was very unhappy with him doing that without, you know, asking for approval beforehand. So he's not going to make the same mistake and execute his own son without Caesar's approval. Okay. All right. That concludes chapter 5. You want to introduce chapter 6, Pastor Steve?
Okay. I need to highlight the word Jews, because it's not Jews. It's mm-hmm. Judeans. Pardon me. Let me get a drink of coffee here. Oh, that's so good. Concerning the disease that Herod fell into, and the rebellion which the Judeans raised thereupon, with the punishment of the rebellious. Now, Herod's ambassadors hurried to Rome, but sent, as instructed beforehand, what answers they were able to make to the questions put to them. They also carried the letters with them. But Herod now fell into a sickness and made his will and bequeathed his kingdom to Antipas, his youngest son. And this out of that hatred to Archelaus and Philip, which the slanders of Antipater had raised against them. He also bequeathed 1,000 talents to Caesar, and 500 to Julia, Caesar's wife, to Caesar's children and friends and freedmen. He also distributed among his sons and their sons his money, his revenues, and his lands. He also made Salome, his sister, very rich, because she had continued faithful to him in all his circumstances, and was never so rash as to do him any harm. She was a good little suck-up.
Yeah, that's right.
And as he despaired of recovering, for he was about the 70th year of his age, he grew fierce and indulged the bitterest anger upon all occasions. The cause whereof was this: that he thought himself despised, and that the nation was pleased with his misfortunes. They were.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Besides which, he resented a rebellion which some of the lower sort of men excited against him, the occasion of which was as follows. Section 2, over to you.
Another sedition, so one after another.
Mm-hmm. Bada bing, bada boom.
There you go. There was one Judas, the son of Seraphias, and Matthias, the son of Margalithus, two of the most eloquent men among probably the Judahites, and most celebrated interpreters of the Judahite laws, the Hebrew laws. And men were beloved by the people because of their education of their youth. For all those that were studious of virtue frequented their lectures every day. So in all likelihood, they were pure-blooded Judahites. These men, when they found that the king's distemper was incurable, excited the young men that they would pull down all those works which the king had erected contrary to the law of their fathers, which all the statuary that Herod had put up was pagan, totally pagan, Greek and Roman, and thereby obtain the reward which the law will confer on them for such actions of piety. So in other words, you know, what would they do? Execute Herod? Let's find out. For that it was truly on account of Herod's rashness in making such things as the law had forbidden, that his other misfortunes and this distemper also, which was also so unusual among mankind, and with which he was now afflicted, came upon him. He had something going on in his bowels, which is very painful. For Herod had caused such things to be made which were contrary to the law, of which he was accused by Judas and Matthias. And it would be extremely dangerous for these two men to make such accusations publicly or privately. For the king had erected over the great gate of the temple a large golden eagle of great value, and had dedicated it to the temple. Now the law forbids those that propose to live according to it to erect images or representations of any living creature. Mm-hmm. So these were wise men, persuaded, they're scholars, to pull down the golden eagle. Okay, so not to kill Herod, but to pull down this eagle. Alleging that although they should incur any danger which might bring them to their deaths, the virtue of the action now proposed to them would appear much more advantageous to them than the pleasures of life, since they would die for the preservation and observation of the law of their fathers, since they would also acquire an everlasting fame and commendation, since they would be both commended by the present generation and leave an example of life that would never be forgotten to posterity. Since that common calamity of dying cannot be avoided by our living so as to escape any such dangers. Well, yeah, we're going to die anyway, so let's die gloriously. That therefore it is a right thing for those who are in love with a virtuous conduct to wait for that fatal hour by such a behavior as may carry them out of the world with praise and honor, and that this will alleviate death to such a degree, thus to come at it by the performance of brave actions, which bring us into danger of it, and at the same time to leave that reputation behind them to their children and to all their relations, whether they be men or women, which will be of great advantage to them afterward. And we found that the Maccabees were all this brave,
yep,
including the women, who braved death in order to not violate Yahweh's laws. Back to you.
Okay, I'm going to warn folks that this is going to get pretty graphic a little later on. So be advised of that.
Okay.
It's going to get really ugly.
Mm-hmm.
Section 3. And with such discourses as this did these men excite the young men to this action. And a report being come to them that the king was dead, this was in addition to the wise men's persuasions. So in the very middle of the day, they got upon the place and pulled down the eagle and cut it into pieces with axes, while a great number of people were in the temple. And now the king's captain, upon hearing what the undertaking was, and supposing it was a thing of a higher nature than it proved to be, came up there, having a great band of soldiers with him, such as was sufficient to put a stop to the multitude of those who pulled down what was dedicated to God.
Supposedly. Right.
Supposedly. Right. Yeah. What? Which God? So yeah. he fell upon them unexpectedly, and as they were upon this bold attempt, in a foolish presumption rather than a cautious circumspection, as is usual with the multitude, mob mentality.
Right. Okay.
And while they were in disorder and incautious of what was for their advantage, so we caught no fewer than 40 of the young men who had the courage to stay behind when the rest ran away. Together with the authors of this bold attempt, Judas and Matthias, who thought it an ignominious thing to retire upon his approach, and led them to the king. And when they were come to the king, he asked them if they had been so bold as to pull down what he had dedicated to God. I quote, "Yes," said they, "what was contrived, we contrived, and what has been performed, we performed it, and with such a virtuous courage as becomes men. For we have given our assistance to those things which were dedicated to the majesty of God. And we have provided for what we have learned by hearing the law. And it ought not to be wondered at if we esteem those laws which Moshe had suggested to him and were taught him by God, and which he wrote and left behind him, more worthy of observations than your command."
Wow.
"Accordingly, we will undergo death and all sorts of punishments which you can inflict upon us with pleasure, since we are conscious to ourselves that we shall die, not for any unrighteous action, but for our love to religion," or the faith. "And thus they all said, and their courage was still equal to their profession and equal to that with which they readily set about this undertaking. And when the king had ordered them to be bound, he sent them to Jericho and called together the principal men among the Judeans. And when they were come, he made them assemble in the theater, and because he could not himself stand, he lay upon a couch and enumerated the many labors that he had long endured on their account, and his building of the temple, and what a vast charge that was to him, while the Asmoneans, during the 125 years of their government, had not been able to perform any so great a work for the honor of God as that was, that he had also adorned it with very valuable donations, on which account he hoped that he had left himself a memorial and procured himself a reputation after his death. He then cried out that these men had not abstained from affronting him, even in his lifetime, and that in the very daytime, and in the sight of the multitude, they had abused him to that degree as to fall upon what he had dedicated, and in that way of abuse had pulled it down to the ground. They pretended, indeed, that they did it to affront him, but if anyone considered the thing truly, they will find that they were guilty of sacrilege against God therein. But that was not true. They
no, of course
did it
not.
Because of the laws
right.
of what that Moshe gave them. You're not to make those graven images.
Yeah, so Herod simply is ignoring their argument that he violated Yahweh's laws and putting up that image of the eagle. So he just totally ignored that. And like a typical Jew, you know, said, "No, I didn't do anything wrong." Section 4. But the people, on account of Herod's barbarous temper, and for fear he should be so cruel as to inflict punishment on them, said what was done without approbation. Okay, well, not by him, not his approbation. And that it seemed to them that the actors might well be punished for what they had done. But as for Herod, he dealt more mildly with others of the assembly. But he deprived Matthias of the high priesthood, as in part on occasion of this action, and made Joazar, who was Matthias' wife's brother, high priest in his stead. So here we have an Edomite determining who becomes high priest. Obviously, this is another violation of Yahweh's laws. Now it happened that during the time of the high priesthood of this Matthias, there was another person made high priest for a single day. That very day, which the Jews, or in this case it would be Judahites, because only the Judahites observed Yahweh's laws, observe as a fast. The occasion was this. This Matthias, the high priest, on the night before that day when the fast was to be celebrated, seemed in a dream to have conversation with his wife. And because he could not officiate himself on that account, Joseph, the son of Elymas, his kinsman, assisted him in that sacred rite or office.
All right, now, conversation means conjugal relations here.
Oh, okay. All right, so the... So anyway, but the, what about the dream?
He seemed
in a dream.
Right,
okay.
And that would make him unclean.
Ah, okay. Yeah.
And he couldn't do the ritual.
Okay, understood. All right, but Herod deprived this Matthias of the high priesthood and burnt the other Matthias who had raised the sedition with his companions alive. And that very night there was an eclipse of the moon. There's a footnote here. This eclipse of the moon, which is the only eclipse mentioned by Josephus, is of the greatest consequence for the determination of the time for the death of Herod and Antipater, and for the birth and entire chronology of Jesus Christ. It happened March 13th in the year of the Julian period 4710, and the fourth year before the Christian era. But I'm aware that this has been updated by recent scholarship to be 1 BC, not 4 BC. Back to you.
Okay. Section 5. But now Herod's sickness greatly increased upon him after a severe manner, and this by God's judgment upon him for his sins.
Hmm. This is bold of Josephus to say that.
Fire glowed in him slowly,
ooh,
which did not so much appear to the touch outwardly, as it augmented his pains inwardly. In other words, he had something going on inside. It was really...
Yeah, painful.
Right.
Yeah.
For it brought upon him a vehement appetite to eating, which he could not avoid to supply with one sort of food or another's. His entrails also had ulcers, and the chief violence of his pain lay on his colon. An aqueous and transparent liquor had also settled itself about his feet.
Ooh.
His feet swole up.
Okay.
And a light manner afflicted him at the bottom of his belly.
Ooh,
and
man.
And this is the nasty part.
Okay.
Further, his genitals were rotting and produced worms. And when he sat upright, he had a difficulty of breathing, which was very loathsome on account of the stench of his breath. In other words, he was rotting inside.
Yeah.
And the quickness of its returns. He had also convulsions in all parts of his body, which increased his strength to an insufferable degree. It was said by those who pretended to divine and who were endued with wisdom to foretell such things that God inflicted this punishment on the king of account of his great impiety. In other words, he just rotted to death.
Right.
That's
wow.
Going on. Yahweh's wrath, but okay. Everybody wants to poo-poo it. Oh, that, right. Man, you're just crazy. Okay.
Yeah, it's probably syphilis.
Yeah, well, mm-hmm. yeah, because mm-hmm. he was very immoral. He right. was just doing everything.
Yeah.
Yet he was still in hopes of recovering, though his affliction seemed greater than anyone could bear. He also sent for physicians and did not refuse to follow what they prescribed for his assistance, and went beyond the river Jordan and bathed himself in the warm baths that were at Kalirahoe, which, besides their other general virtues, were also fit to drink.
Sounds like a place in Scotland.
Right, which water runs into the lake called Asphaltitis.
Asphaltitis. Neat.
Okay. And when the physicians once thought fit to have him bathed in a vessel full of oil, it was supposed that he was just dying. But upon the lamentable cries of his servants, he revived. And having no longer the least hopes of recovering, he gave order that every soldier should be paid 50 drachmas. And he also gave a great deal to their commanders and to his friends, and came again to Jericho, where he grew so choleric that it brought him to do all things like a madman. And though he were near his death, he contrived the following wicked design.
Before I die, I have to do even more wickedness.
Right. He commanded that all the principal men of the entire Judahite nation, wheresoever they lived, should be called to him. Accordingly, there were a great number that came, because the whole nation was called, and all men heard of this call. And death was the penalty of such as should despise the letters that were sent to call them. And now the king was in a wild rage against them all, the innocent as well as those had afforded grounds for accusation. And when they were come, he ordered them to be all shut up in the hippodrome.
Oh.
That's note 4. It's a place for the horse races. And sent for his sister Salome and her husband Alexis, and spoke thus to them. I shall die in a little time, so great are my pains, which death ought to be cheerfully borne, and to be welcomed by all men. But what mainly troubles me is this, that I shall die without being lamented, and without such mourning as men usually expect as a king's death. For that he was not unacquainted with the temper of the Judahites, that his death would be a thing very desirable and exceedingly acceptable to them, because during his lifetime they were ready to revolt from him and to abuse the donations he had dedicated to God.
Let me interject here. Your translation here is absolutely correct. It was the Judahites who opposed Herod throughout his entire tenure as tetrarch. It would not have been the Edomites, you know, who could be referred to as Judeans, but not as Judahites. The Judeans, the Edomite Judeans, could have cared less, and they would have followed Herod because he was one of their kinsmen.
Yeah, the Judean is a national designator,
right?
A territorial, you know, like being a Californian,
right?
Okay. Well, there's all kinds of Californians. So yes. I read this where it says the Jews, it's Judeans.
Right, yeah. Well, in this case, it would be Judahites.
Not Judeans, it's Judahites.
Right.
Pardon.
Because the Judeans did not practice the Mosaic Law. Back to you.
No. That it therefore was their business to resolve to afford him some alleviation of his great sorrows on this occasion, for that if they do not refuse him their consent, in what he desires, he shall have a great mourning at his funeral, and such as never had any king before him. For then the whole nation would mourn from their very soul, which otherwise would be done in sport and mockery.
I love it. You had to pay people to cry publicly.
And it brings to mind, ding dong, the witch is dead. Wicked witch, oh witch, the wicked witch. Ding dong, the wicked witch is dead.
Right. And that song by Bob Zimmerman, he had to give out free tickets to the wedding of his son because nobody wanted to attend the wedding. So back to you.
Yeah. He desired, therefore, that as soon as they see he has given up the ghost, they shall place soldiers round the hippodrome while they do not know that he is dead, and that they shall not declare his death to the multitude until this is done, but that they shall give orders to have those that are in custody shot with their darts, and that this slaughter of them all will cause that he shall not miss to rejoice on a double account, that as he is dying, they will make him secure that his will shall be executed in what he charges them to do, and that he shall have the honor of a memorable mourning at his funeral. So he deplored his condition with tears in his eyes and begged them by the kindness due from them as of his family and by the faith they owed to God that they would not hinder him of this honorable mourning at his funeral. So they promised him not to transgress his commands.
Okay, so he commanded people to mourn him, whether they like it or not, whether they mean it or not. Section 6. Now anyone may easily discover the temper of this man's mind, which Josephus is doing an admirable job of characterizing, which not only took pleasure in doing what he had done formerly against his relations out of love of life, or power, but by those commands of his which savored of no humanity. Since he took care when he was departing out of this life that the whole nation should be put into mourning, and indeed made desolate of their dearest kindred, so they would really mourn, right? When he gave order that one out of every family should be slain, although they had done nothing that was unjust or against him, nor were they accused of any other crimes. While it is usual for those who have any regard to virtue to lay aside their hatred at such a time, even with respect to those they justly esteemed their enemies. So Herod, being a pure-blooded Edomite, was evil to his dying breath. Back to you.
Dirty deeds done dirt cheap.
Yeah, right.
Oh, boy.
Man.
He's going to make everybody mourn, if not for him.
Right.
For their own family.
That's right.
This guy was a real peach, wasn't he?
Yeah, rotten peach, right? Rotten apple.
Man,
yeah, it's just no comparison. I mean,
his business was rotten off.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, man.
And his, yeah. He was oozing pus. His bowels were ready to explode. Right,
his breath was. It tells in the Bible that he got worms and died.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There you go.
It does.
All right.
And
probably from eating pork.
Chapter. Yeah.
Yeah.
The trichinitis.
There you go.
Yep. Herod has thoughts of killing himself with his own hand, and a little afterwards, he orders Antipater to be killed. This is chapter 7, section 1.
Okay.
As he was giving these commands to his relations, there came letters from his ambassadors who had been sent to Rome to Caesar, which, when they were read, their purport was this. that Acme was killed by Caesar out of his indignation at what hand she had and Antipater's wicked practices.
I guess that bribe wasn't enough.
And that as to Antipater himself, Caesar left it to Herod to act as became a father and a king, and either to banish him or take away his life as he pleased. In other words, just do whatever you want with this kid.
Right.
When Herod heard this, he was somewhat better. Okay, mm-hmm. Let me flip over. Out of the pleasure he had from the contents of letters and was elated at the death of Acme and at the power that was given him over his son. But as his pains were becoming very great, and he was rotting to death,
right.
He was now ready to faint for want of something to eat. So he called for an apple and a knife, for it was his custom formerly to pare the apple himself, and soon afterwards to cut it and eat it. When he had got the knife, he looked about and had a mind to stab himself with it, and he had done it had not his first cousin, Achiavus, prevented him and held his hand and cried out loudly. Whereupon a woeful lamentation echoed through the palace, and a great disturbance was made as if the king were dead. Upon which Antipater, who verily believed his father was deceased, grew bold in his discourse, as hoping to be immediately and entirely released from his bonds and to take the kingdom into his hands without any more ado. So he discoursed with the jailer about letting him go, and in that case promised him great things, both now and hereafter, as if that were the only thing now in question. But the jailer did not only refuse to do what Antipater would have him, but informed the king of his intentions and how many solicitations he had from him of that nature. But Herod, who had formerly no affection nor goodwill towards his son to restrain him, when he heard what the jailer said, he cried out and beat his head, although he was at death's door, and raised himself upon his elbow and sent for some of his guards and commanded them to kill Antipater without any further delay, and to do it presently, and to bury him in an ignoble manner at Hyrcania.
Man, and Antipater was so close to becoming king. If he hadn't mistaken the cry of the crowd for the death of Herod, he might yet have lived.
Oh, well.
Wow.
Talk about chapter 8. This is yours.
Yeah, talk about a Jewish soap opera. I sincerely hope and pray that we will witness the Jews assassinating each other in the same manner when the kingdom comes.
I want to see Hillary and Bill.
Right, duke it out.
Rot. I want to see them rot to death.
Their entrails falling out, right? Me too. All right, chapter 8. Concerning Herod's death and testament and burial. So, folks, this will be the last chapter. This will be the end of Herod's life. And whether we continue with this or not depends. I think I know you, Pastor Steve, there's more to tell about the Herodians, his successors. And
well, there's all kinds of revolutions and wars and all
right,
kinds of
yeah.
stuff. This whole book is just so cool.
Yeah, right.
It's rebellions and murders. I mean,
plots, plots and sex, blood, violence, even rock and roll. All right. Section 1. And now Herod altered his testament upon the alteration of his mind, for he appointed Antipas, to whom he had before left the kingdom, to be tetrarch of Galilee and Berea, and granted the kingdom to Archelaus. He also gave Gaulonitis and Trachonitis and Peneus to Philip, who was his son, but own brother to Archelaus. Let's see, there's a footnote here. When it is said that Philip and Archelaus were own brothers or born of the same father and mother, there must be some mistake, because they had indeed the same father, Herod, but different mothers. The former Cleopatra and Archelaus, Malthus. They were indeed brought up together at Rome like own brothers, which intimacy is perhaps all that Josephus intended by the words before. So he was being kind in his description here, but it was not literal. They were not literal because they had different mothers. Continuing. Let me start the sentence over. He also gave Gaulonitis and Trachonitis and Peneus to Philip. These are territories. Who was his son, but own brother to Archelaus. Now, maybe Josephus is simply mistaken here. Okay, that's a possibility too. By the name of a tetrarchy, and bequeathed Jamnia and Ashdod and Phasaelus to Salome his sister with 500,000 drachmae of silver that was coined. By the way, it was at Jamnia that the Talmudic rabbis established a, what did he call their schools? I forget, they're Talmudic schools. The Jamnia was one of the first Talmudic schools after the death of Yeshua. He also made provision for all the rest of his kindred by giving them sums of money and annual revenue.
You mean the yeshiva?
Yeshiva, yes, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, one of the very first yeshivas, certainly in Palestine. It had to be the first yeshiva in Palestine after the death of Christ. Okay, good. But they still had them in Babylon, right? Those are far older.
Okay.
Right. Okay, so he also made provision for all the rest of his kindred by giving them sums of money and annual revenues, and so left them all in a wealthy condition. He bequeathed, so he was better to them in his death than he was during his life. He bequeathed also to Caesar 10 millions of drachmae of coined money, besides both vessels of gold and silver and garments exceedingly costly, to Julia, Caesar's wife, and to certain others 5 millions. When he had done those things, he died, the fifth day after he had caused Antipater to be slain. So if Antipater had simply kept his mouth shut, he might have lived to become king. Having reigned, since he had produced Antigonus to be slain, 34 years. Oh, sorry. Since he had procured Antigonus to be slain, Antigonus was a true Judahite, son of John Hyrcanus. But since he had been declared king by the Romans, 37. So he ruled for 37 years as the occupier for the Romans. A man, he was of great barbarity towards all men equally, and a slave to his passions, but above the consideration of what was right. Yet was he favored by fortune as much as any man ever was, for from a private man he became a king, and though he were encompassed with 10,000 dangers, he got clear of them all, and continued his life till a very old age. But then, as to the affairs of his family and children, in which, indeed, according to his own opinion, he was also very fortunate, because he was able to conquer his enemies, yet, in my opinion, he was herein very unfortunate. Okay, yeah, I mean, he was a Jew, an Edomite Jew, who had usurped the kingdom of Judah, and he escaped death many times, but finally he was consumed by his own evil. Back to you.
He just rotted to death.
Yeah,
well, that's a punishment.
Amen.
All right, let me get ahead of this coffee while
yes.
Wet my whistle before I hold forth on section 2 here.
Okay.
Chapter 8 is not all that long.
Right. Okay.
Oh, yes. But then Salome and Alexis, before the king's death was made known, dismissed those that were shut up in the hippodrome and told them that the king ordered them to go away to their own lands and take care of their own affairs, which was esteemed by the nation a great benefit.
Now, Herod had meant for them to be killed, correct? Wasn't that his intention?
Well, he was going to kill one out of every family, and they were all to mourn him. Well,
right.
that just sort of went.
Yeah, that's good. So a lot of innocent people were saved. Okay.
Mm-hmm. And now the king's death was made public. When Salome and Alexis gathered the soldiers together in the amphitheater at Jericho, and the first thing they did was they read Herod's letter written to the soldiers, thanking them for their faithfulness and goodwill to him, and exhorting them to afford his son Archelaus, whom he had appointed for their king, like faithfulness and goodwill. After which, Ptolemy, who had the king's seal entrusted to him, read the king's testament, which was to be of forth no otherwise than as it should stand when Caesar had inspected it. So there was presently an acclamation made to Archelaus as king, and the soldiers came by bands and their commanders with them, and promised the same goodwill to him and readiness to serve him, which they had exhibited to Herod, and they prayed God to be assistant to him.
Okay. Now, I don't recall if Archelaus was a half-breed or a Edomite through and through. We'd have to go back to find that out.
Well, he was an Edomite.
Yeah,
he was of Herod.
Right. Mm-hmm. Herod was his father. No matter who his mother was, he's an Edomite. Yeah. Paragraph 3. After this was over, they prepared for his funeral, it being Archelaus' care that the procession to his father's sepulcher should be very sumptuous. Accordingly, he brought out all his ornaments to adorn the pomp of the funeral. The body was carried upon a golden bier, embroidered with very precious stones of great variety, and it was covered with purple, as well as the body itself. He had a diadem upon his head, and above it a crown of gold. He had also a scepter in his right hand. About the bier were his sons and his numerous relations. Next to these was the soldiery, distinguished according to their several countries and denominations, and they were put into the following order. First of all went his guards, then the band of Thracians, and after them the Germans. Wow. Germans.
Germania.
Yeah, right? And those would be Judahites living primarily in Parthia in those days.
That's right.
And next, the band of Galatians. Galatians, who were they? They were ex-Israelites, or not ex-Palestinians, put it that way, had formerly lived in Palestine, had moved to France and come back to Palestine, living among the Asherites, the Naphtalites, Zebulunites, etc. Okay?
Right.
All right. Now, next, the band of Galatians, everyone in their habiliments of war. And behind these marched the whole army in the same manner as they used to go out to war, and as they used to be put in array by their muster masters and centurions, drill sergeants, I guess. These were followed by 500 of his domestics carrying spices. So they went 8 furlongs to Herodium, for there by his own command he was to be buried. And thus did Herod end his life. There's a footnote here. At 8 stadia, or furlongs, a day, Herod's funeral conducted to Herodium, which lay at the distance from Jericho where he died, of 200 stadia, or furlongs, must have taken up no less than 25 days, according to this footnote. Okay.
Well, so, I bet you he was fragrant by the end of that.
Oh, man, yeah, right? There must have been nothing left of him.
Well, he rotted to death, so he was already in process.
Mm-hmm. Who would dare to open that coffin after another 25 days? I don't think they had invented formaldehyde yet.
No.
Yeah.
They just use spices. That's
yeah, right.
Hide the smell.
There you go. Ring around the rosy, pocket full of posies, right? That song harkens back to the plague when they used to carry posies to cover up the smell of the rosies, right? The little round sores that you got when you had the plague. Back to you.
Where are we at here?
Section 4.
Section 4, all right. I was laughing. Pardon me. Now, Archelaus paid him so much respect as to continue his mourning until the seventh day. For so many days are appointed for it by the law of our fathers. All right, that's the Torah. Because Josephus was pure-blooded Judahite.
Uh-huh.
And when he had given a gift to the multitude and left off his movements, he went up into the temple. He had also acclamations and praises given to him whichever way he went, everyone striving with the rest who should appear to use the loudest acclamations.
Or die.
Yeah. So he ascended a high elevation made for him and took his seat. This is Archelaus, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So, in a throne made of gold, and spoke kindly to the multitude, and declared with what joy he received their acclamations, and the marks of the goodwill they showed to him, and returned them thanks that they did not remember the injuries his father had done them to his disadvantage, and promised them he would try not to treat them as inferiors in rewarding their readiness in his service after a suitable manner.
That would have encouraged the people, yeah.
Right. He was going to be better than the old man.
Right.
But that he should abstain at present from the name of king, and that he should have the honor of that dignity, if Caesar should confirm and settle that testament which his father had made, and that it was on this account that when the army would have put the diadem on him at Jericho, he would not accept of that honor, which is usually so much desired, because it was not yet evident that he who was to be mainly concerned in bestowing it would give it to him. In other words, he's waiting for Caesar.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't going to be presumptuous and make Caesar angry.
Right. Well, what more proof?
A little bit smarter than average
printer. Yeah, Edomite. I mean, how much more proof do you need that the entire Herodian dynasty reigned at the behest of Rome?
Right.
Okay. Go ahead.
Although, by his acceptance of the government, he should not want the ability of rewarding their kindness to him, and that it should be his try as to all things wherein they were concerned to prove in every respect better than his father.
Okay.
That went over well, I'm sure.
Yes, absolutely.
Whereupon the multitude, as it is usual with them, supposed that the first days of those that enter upon such governments declare the intentions of those that accept them. And so by how much Archelaus spoke the more gently and civilly, to them, by so much did they more highly commend him and made application to him for the grant of what they desired. Some made a clamor that he would ease them of some of their annual payments, but others desired him to release those that were put into prison by Herod, who were many and had been put there at several times. In other words, free the prisoners. Mm-hmm. If your old man locked up for nothing.
Right.
That's why we hope a presidential pardon for some of these people that the Clintons and Obama Llama Ding Dong locked up.
Mm-hmm.
Others of them required that he would take away those taxes, which had been severely laid upon what was publicly sold and bought. So Archelaus contradicted them in nothing, since he pretended to do all things so as to get the goodwill of the multitude to him, as looking upon that goodwill to be a great step toward his preservation of the government.
Okay.
But he went and offered sacrifice to God and then went to feast with his friends.
Okay.
So he was basically shining on the public as a typical politician. In order to get their favor, and then later on, he was going to do what he was going to do.
Mm-hmm. So at this point in time, the public, as just as when we had elected Donald Trump, there was a great optimism, right? But that optimism didn't last very long. I think I'll just we have time for section one of chapter 9. How the people raised a sedition against Archelaus, and how he sailed to Rome. So with all the goodwill and happy, happy, cheery, cheery, at the end of chapter 8, the next thing that happens is the people raise a sedition against him, right? So it's obvious that the goodwill didn't last long.
They knew he was an Edomite. They didn't want an Edomite over him.
Right.
You know, can you blame him? We don't want Edomites over us now.
Right. Just another Edomite by Rome. Yeah. So we had 37 years of Herod the Edomite. We don't want any more Edomite rule. Section 1. At this time also, it was that some of the it would have to be Judahites got together out of a desire of innovation. They lamented Matthias. Okay, yeah, so they were still lamenting the death whom Herod had slain of Matthias, and those that were slain with him by Herod, who had not any respect paid them by a funeral mourning, out of the fear men were in of that man. They were those who had been condemned for pulling down the golden eagle. The people made a great clamor and lamentation hereupon, and cast out some reproaches also against the king, as if that tended to alleviate the miseries of the deceased. The people assembled together and desired of Archelaus that in way of revenge on their account he would inflict punishment on those who had been honored by Herod. That's a lot to ask of Archelaus. Mm-hmm. And that in the first and principal place he would deprive that high priest whom Herod had made, and would choose one more agreeable to the law and of greater purity, that is bloodline, to officiate as high priest. This was granted by Archelaus. Wow. Although he was mightily offended at their importunity, because he proposed to himself to go to Rome immediately to look after Caesar's determination about him. So, Archelaus was mightily offended by this request, but he granted it anyway. Well, why would he be offended? Well, again, two reasons. To undo what his father had done, and because he probably understood that he was a Edomite, half-breed at best. Okay? So, but now
well,
he proposed...
Well, it's like they want Trump to repeal Obamacare.
Right.
You actually think that's going to happen?
No, it hasn't happened.
Sure hasn't.
Yeah, the only thing, as Doc Waterman revealed last night, the only thing that was repealed was the mandatory aspect of it. But it still makes the insurance much more expensive than it used to be. Continuing, however, he sent the general of his forces to use persuasions and to tell them that the death which was inflicted on their friends was according to the law. Okay, so publicly he acceded, but now he's backtracking. and to represent to them that they're just like Trump, and to represent to them that their petitions about these things were carried to a great height of injury to him. Yeah, I was really offended by what you were asking me, so I don't think I want to do it anymore. That the time was not now proper for such petitions, but that required their unanimity until such time as he should be established in the government by the consent of Caesar, and should then come back to them. Okay, so I'll keep your request in mind. Goodbye. For that he would then consult with them in common concerning the purport of their petitions. Yeah, right. But that they ought at present to be quiet, lest they should seem seditious persons. Okay, so we could see more trouble coming. More trouble ahead. Okay.
Well, we got section one done. We're not going to be able to get section two because we're out of time.
Yes. But this ends the life of Herod. The story of Herod from his being appointed as Tetrarch by Julius Caesar. Mm-hmm. Okay, these are all historical figures, folks. Don't let any pagan or secular critic of the Bible tell you that this stuff did not happen. And there are secular accounts of Roman historians that confirm virtually everything that has been told about Herod by Josephus.
Okay, remember the saying, those who keep no history are condemned to repeat it.
Yeah, right.
What have we heard in this book, and is this commonly taught to our people today?
Mm-hmm.
We're the only ones that really expound on this, and we have been repeating history in our Aryan
nations.
Race, repeating the same stuff and the same methodology that was used back then. We're seeing a repeat of these things by our people because we haven't learned from history.
Right.
Well, we're trying to make amends on that and get people educated as to what went on, that there is nothing new under the sun. All these devilish things that are going on today were done before.
Right.
By these same people.
Edomites.
They don't change.
They don't change, folks.
It is the nature of the snake to be a snake.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to change that satanic DNA.
Amen. Well, they gain power by bribery and assassination. That's how Antipater got Herod to be a tetrarch, at first tetrarch of Galilee, and then ultimately Judea, okay? And that's how the Jews got control of our country, through bribery and assassination, the Federal Reserve Bank.
Mm-hmm.
And they have been in control of our country ever since. It's history repeating itself. The only difference is that they haven't declared themselves to be king, but they have been operating as virtual dictators ever since. Thanks to their banking operations. So, folks, this history has repeated itself time and time again. There's a reason why the Jews have been kicked out of over 109 Christian countries throughout history. And this last one is going to have to be done by Yahshua, because we're not in a position to eject them for the 110th time. All right, folks. All right, so that completes the life of Herod. And maybe we'll get some feedback from the listeners as to whether we should continue. But there would be probably a historical benefit to going on with this study. So today concludes.
I personally would like to go on.
Okay. All right. So let's do that. So next week will be chapter 20. Although maybe we should give it a different title.
No. This is book 17. Mm-hmm. This is chapter 9. And we are verse.
Yeah.
Section 2.
Okay. Well, the life of Herod is what the series has been entitled, so we may want to change the title. Okay? All right, folks, thanks for listening. Praise Yahweh. Pass the ammunition. See you all next time.
Beep.